Welcome to the February 17th, 2006 dsmith.org podcast, Uncertainty in Testing and Measurement. I'm Doug Smith. When troubleshooting a design, the single most important parameter to control is the test environment. Minimizing the variability in that environment that introduces uncertainty into the measurement. Because if you get uncertainty that gives you an unreliable test result, it's probably the biggest time waster in a debugging operation. Whether it be a compliance problem like ESD or EMI or a design issue. When doing experiments in debugging and troubleshooting, this translates into changing only one variable at a time. And sometimes that can be more difficult than it seems. You think you're changing one thing, but in fact, two or three or more variables are changing. And this can lead to a scatterplot of results and cause weeks, even months of effort to be wasted trying to track down a design problem. There are several articles on my website that deal with this. The first one was dated October 2003, the technical tidbit on uncertainty and signal measurements. And in that technical tidbit, I have a graph there that shows uncertainty and the measurement induced by the probe, where you can you're probing a signal. And we can talk about the response to the probe, but what you can never really see is what the probe does to the signal. It's sort of like Heisenberg uncertainty principle. And there we show a simulation that shows under some conditions we can do some really strange things to the signal that we're not aware of. So that's one example of what can happen. The next example on my website was a year later in October 2005, and that technical tidbit was titled Controlling Variables in High-Frequency Tests and Measurement, an ESD Example. And in that article, I show that using a current probe to measure the current supplied by an ESD simulator into your test setup can uncover all kinds of problems in the test setup. One of the problems could be, for instance, on the ESD ground plane, there's a little plastic insulating layer. I believe the standard spells it to be half a millimeter. The first picture in my article shows a disk drive sitting on that and a current probe on an ESD gun tip. Sometimes people, when they're doing this test, don't pay a lot of attention to the thickness of that layer. You may not think it matters much, but if it were 1 millimeter thick instead of a half a millimeter thick, the capacitance between, for instance, that disk drive that sits flat on the plane would be double. Or actually, it would be half. It would be twice the distance, epsilon A over D, for parallel plate capacitor formula, and that can have a huge effect on the amount of ESD energy passing through a device. And if we test at different sites with different thicknesses of insulating layer for something that sits flat on the ground plane, it can make a big difference. The third example, which is also described in a separate podcast on this site, was the January 2006 tidbit, ESD, a small change can have a large effect, where we talked about the effect of small rubber feet on a small switch box in terms of ESD discharge currents, and that created a large effect. And who would ever think that just adding those feet would have that effect? I have seen many of my clients over time, by the time I get involved, they've been debugging an ESD or an EMC or a design problem for a long time. And in fact, what they've been doing is introducing their own problems into the design, into the troubleshooting procedure that actually wipes out what's going on in the circuit board. For instance, adding a scope probe to a signal can affect the signal quite a bit these days. In addition, you're sticking a big antenna on the signal, and you may be adding some external noise that wasn't there before, and then you end up tracking that down. So there's all kinds of things that can happen here. Another example, and I use a lot of ESD examples because ESD waveforms have some really fast components to them as well as slow components, so they cover the whole spectrum. But intermittent chassis contact between, say, a lid and the bottom part of a chassis, whether that makes contact or doesn't, maybe there's only a couple screws, so in the middle it may or may not make contact, depending on how you screwed it down. That creates a huge uncertainty as to the test result, a variability, I should say, in the test result. And I've seen it make a 2-to-1 difference in the ESD immunity of equipment and just wipe out other things that were being done in the test. The people weren't aware this was happening. So it's very important to understand all these parameters, especially the things that affect high frequencies, where a picofarad here and a nanohenry there are very important. If you can get the test to change only one variable at a time, you're much more likely to succeed in a relatively short period of time. One way to track down a noise problem in a piece of equipment, say sensitivity to external stimulus of some kind, ESD or EMI, would be to inject controlled amounts of noise in one specific area of the circuit at a time that you think might have a problem. And that way, only that part of the circuit is being activated, and we can reduce our dependence on the rest of the test environment. One way to do this is to take a powerful pulse generator, such as used in the IEC 61000-4-4 test, called the Electrical Fast Transient Burst Test. We can connect that to a small loop, say 1-inch square, made out of stiff wire. And with that generator, you can induce controlled amounts of noise into specific parts of the circuit, even individual paths on a circuit board, on the order of a few volts to 10 volts, as much as 10 volts, and use that to find out what's happening. That particular technique is described in a couple of my seminars. Very handy and very useful. And there's other ways you can imagine of getting noise into circuits in a specific location as a way of troubleshooting. In each of my courses that I do that you'll see listed on my website, dsmith.org, I include information about how to do these kinds of things. But much of it's just common sense. Although, again, with high frequencies, you have to pay really close attention to what sometimes you wouldn't, and some of this is spelled out in my technical tidbit articles. But just keep in mind, you just got to change one thing at a time. And otherwise, you can turn a troubleshooting job that might take a day, you can turn it into a month of work very easily. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Please feel free to send comments and suggestions to me at doug@dsmith.org. Again, thanks for listening.